lab late one night, when my eyes beheld an eerie sight, for my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
And welcome everybody to another episode of Fat Guys at the Movie Second Reel. We have our marathon guest, Joe Neff, coming into the theater, into the magical studio in the sky. Well, he'll be coming to the theater in about a month.
Is that both?
Well, hopefully both, yeah.
The magical theater studio in the sky?
Yeah, sure.
With like Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds?
It's magical. It can be anywhere.
Mushroom clouds. And
But we've had Joe on the last couple of years, right around this time in the fall when the nights start getting longer and it starts getting chillier out here and leaves start to fall and people start wearing blood red clothes, at least in Columbus, Ohio.
They do, yeah.
But that's about college football, and we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the, what is it officially called now? The shock around the clock?
Shock around, no article there, just shock around the clock. We have many shocks, yeah.
It is just any shock
just
around.
Shock around the clock.
You'll be shocked around the clock. The fourth annual Ohio 24-hour horror marathon from noon Saturday, October 20th to noon Sunday, October 21st at the Grandview Theater, 1247 Grandview Avenue, Columbus, Ohio.
You got it.
Isn't that awesome? I actually knew that from memory.
I don't have to say anything else. I think my job's done here.
Joe brought a flyer along with us.
Note the sound effects in the back.
Breaking news. My cheat sheet. Anyways, we had Joe on for the last couple. Have we done it for all the four annual Ohio?
Oh, God.
I don't think I did it that first one.
Maybe not.
Because that was the one with Irreversible and Stuart Gordon.
Yeah. We didn't talk then?
I don't think we talked ahead of it.
Maybe we didn't. I don't know.
We did.
I know we have the last couple of years, though.
The last three we have. I know we have. So I thought I'd bring on Joe again because this is a great event and I'm going to be there and everyone else should be. Get your tickets now.
Yeah, if you like Kevin, come to the event, please. If you don't like him, come to the event.
Yeah, anybody. That pretty much covers everybody.
If you like people like Kevin, come to the event.
Or if you don't like people like Kevin. Well, if you don't like people like me, there's a lot of people like me. If you don't like bearded...
Okay, yeah, warning, but to be fair. Yeah.
If you're bothered by bearded fat men, you might want to avoid this marathon.
Possibly.
Anyways, let's talk about this. We do this every year, and it's good to get some profiles of the marathon, talk about the films that are going to be there, any other things that are going to happen. First of all, I got to ask, are we going to show Slither this year? The world wants to know.
I don't know. I don't know how to answer.
It on the schedule.
No, it's not. Oh, boy. I'm almost tempted to say I can't comment on that. But as of right now, on this day in September when we're recording this, no, there are no plans right now to show Slither.
One of these days.
But you know what? We had plans to show Slither, and it didn't happen. Yeah. So, God, if I know.
I think one of these days you're just going to be like, oh, shit, we don't have anything. But we have the Slither print that just
got sent to us. Okay, I'm willing to say there will be a day. As long as we keep doing these things. Note that disclaimer. As long as we keep doing them, there will be a day when we'll show it.
In a couple of years in the future, we'll just go to Joe's house on a random Sunday and Saturday.
Yeah, I didn't mention that. They might be in my basement. Actually, you know, at the Cleveland Sci-Fi Marathon this past January that they do up at Case Western, they showed Slither at about 2 in the morning. And it was great, but it was weird, too, because I felt like I was the one person in the audience.
You felt like you were cheating?
Yeah. Or I was the one person in the audience who had such a buildup saying, like, wow, it's finally here, even though no one else cares.
And people's like, eh, it was okay. It had that guy from Firefly.
Yeah. Well, and seeing it again, it would be great at a marathon. It's just, I don't know about this year. We did think about it, but there are so many things that opened up to us this year and so many anniversaries or tributes or things like that I don't know if it's going to happen or not.
Okay. Well, first of all, for those who are new listening to the show, now that you've heard the whole Slither controversy, just blurb it really quickly. What is this all about? I've already talked about it, but you'd let people know.
The short form since 1988, eons ago, the first night of the Living Drexel 24-hour horror marathon here in Columbus, back at the dear departed Drexel North. There's been some sort of horror marathon event here. There were 7 24-hour horror marathons at the Drexel North. There were a few all-nighters that I helped to run then at the Drexel in Grandview. Then I ran 5 24-hour horror marathons at Studio 35. Then my partner in crime, Bruce Bartu, who the father of the marathons here in Columbus, who started the sci-fi and horror marathons, he and I collaborated on 5 all-nighters at the Drexel Grandview. And then when it became the Grandview, not the Drexel Grandview, we've run the last now 4 24-hour marathons there. So long time, slowly mutating, slowly resurrecting tradition. Unlike sci-fi, which has a nice, easy lineage, horror's all over the place. But you know what?
I don't know if you could call the sci-fi easy. I noticed that what's funny is if you look at the numbers,
easy lineage.
The numbers don't add up on either one because you've been doing this since, what, 1989? And it's the 4th annual.
This is what the I think this is the 15th or 16th 24-hour horror marathon in Columbus. Yeah. But this is a different name and it's technically a different event, but I don't know. If
because the Ohio marathons, it's like up to like something like 68 or something like that.
Yeah, somewhere in the thousands, I think, at this point. Yeah, it's sci-fi marathon at least has always had a fairly straight lineage, even if you ignore the years, where it's kind of been the same event,
like where it went to the continent and
but it's always been the same basic team and philosophy, whereas this has gone from, it started at the Drexel North, and then when I did it at Studio, it was kind of a tribute to what Bruce did at the Drexel North. And
you're the scrappy young punk.
I was kind of the Jesse Pinkman to Bruce's Walt White of the marathons. Although the more we're in it, I think I'm more of the Walt White now, with crazy schemes and pushing people into things.
The big irony of this whole switching the marathon time, you know it's at the Drexel North right now?
Columbus Sports Connection.
It's a fitness place.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the worst. I never was sitting there for 24 straight hours watching movies, eating pizza, and drinking Dr. Pepper, thinking this would be a great place to work.
Well, if you remember back in the day, it used to be the Columbus Sports Connection was next door, and there was always be a controversy about parking because they wouldn't want the Columbus Sports Connection people, or they wouldn't want the Drexel North customers to park in Columbus Sports Connection parking lot. And now the Drexel North is Columbus Sports Connection, so they have problems with people parking in like the comic book store parking lot or anywhere else like that. So what that means, I don't know. Other than
it's
life's
like
odd.
The hippies and the yuppies.
Yeah,
you know, just all comes full circle.
Yeah, but no, I never thought it would be a drugstore. I never thought it would be a gym. Yeah. Telling you though, someday that lottery ticket comes in. Now the Columbus Sports Connection is going to come after me.
That's okay.
Yeah, my address is.
They don't listen to this show.
No.
All right. Well, let's see what all is happening here. Do you want to just kind of talk about some of the movies?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Hey, pick it. What order you want to go with? Serbian Film 2.
Serbian Film 2, hot on the heels of last year's epic screening.
It was funny as I looked at this lineup. And you can go to, what is it, horrormarathon.com?
Horrormarathon.com,
and see any changes to it, because we're recording this in mid-September, so by the time this airs, you know, the entire list might change.
And if you'd like to go, we also are on Facebook. If you look up Ohio Science Fiction and Horror Marathons, we're on there. We're on Twitter, at Ohio Marathons, and then the message board and the website at horrormarathon.com.
Yeah. But it's funny, as I looked at this list, and I'm like, okay, I know there's a couple of them that are a little bit R-rated.
Yeah,
but this is an extremely tame list compared to the last several ones. I mean, there's
no amazing what Serbian film can do, the cleansing effects it has, the how it sets the bar beyond anything else you could ever do. So now we can sneak in all sorts of smut and terrible things, and people will say, "Well, it's not Serbian
it's
film."
Not,
at
well,
the
yeah,
very least,
this, they're like, "Well, this is practically G-rated."
Yeah,
tits and ass everywhere.
Yeah,
but that's
okay. Even though some of the stuff that's in the lineup is pretty strong and was strong in its time and is still kind of cutting edge in a lot of ways. It dawned on us too when we were booking these things. We kept thinking, "Is this strong enough? Are we going too easy on them?"
And then we beat last year.
Yeah, and then we looked and said, "Well, wait, we have 4 or 5 films that are pretty strong still." So,
well, before we get into that, actually, because Liam, my son Liam, who comes to all the marathons, he's here in the Magical Studio in the Sky with us, and he has a great idea for a movie that could beat a Serbian film in levels of controversy, and rage and offensiveness, that we should show at an upcoming marathon. So Liam, what do you think?
Twilight.
This gets brought up every year now. This is, for those of you out there in listener land, this is Kevin's pet project, I think, now, because it's not the first time he said Twilight should show.
And
I don't know. Maybe someday. The time may be coming at some point, but I don't know. I'm just going to shut up now.
The very least, there should be a series. They should at least show all the Twilight trailers.
I know we've showed some of the Twilight trailers before.
I remember you showed at, well, not you, because it wasn't yours. It was the Sci-Fi Marathon. Yeah. They showed the Host trailer and that kind of, and that was just a teaser with a bunch of eyeballs.
If I could remember, I think we showed the Twilight trailer upside down and backwards at Horror a couple years ago, maybe. I forget. Yeah, it'll happen. Oddly enough, we don't have any vampire films. Oh. That's kind of one of the weird things. We've been a little deficient in the vampire category.
Because they're all shit now, right?
It's tough. Some of them are tough to get on film. That's part of the problem. Some of the classic stuff are like The Hunger, you know. God, we'd show The Hunger this year if we could get it on film.
Were they talking about doing The Hunger this year? I thought there was something that was added to the page and then got taken off.
I probably posted something on the Facebook page when Tony Scott died in tribute to that. As you all know out there, anyone who knows me, all I do is watch The Hunger and Suspiria in my basement when I'm not working or breathing.
And Michael Mann movies.
And Michael Mann movies, yeah. It's a constant loop down there. But I love The Hunger. We showed it 9 years ago at Studio 35, but I don't think there's a print of it right now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's another issue.
Yeah. But
let's go through. What do you want to start with?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Should we start at the end where it's a little more tame? Yeah, let's start with the more tame fair, and then we'll build up to the...
There's two orders here. There's one front and back.
Yeah. Let's see. Start with White Zombie. How about that? White Zombie, which somehow has never shown at a Columbus Marathon before.
And I'm going to just, for those who don't know, it has nothing to do with Rob Zombie. So rest assured, you're not going to get a shitty
for you kids in the audience. Let me. it's Bela Lugosi's 130th birthday on October 20th, Saturday of the marathon. And I think it's something we've wanted to show for a while, too, because it's just... Have you seen White Zombie?
Actually, I watched it last year.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty goofy in a lot of ways. But
it's not a typical zombie movie.
No. You're talking pre-Romero,
this is
flesh
old-fashioned voodoo zombies.
When all the zombies were voodoo somnambulists who just kind of did evil deeds and lifted things.
As Keith David would say, voodoo bullshit.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Any reference to Keith David makes the podcast for me. Or David Keith, for that matter. Yeah, so it's Bela Lugosi's birthday. Yeah, if you're listening out there, David Keith, much respect to you.
Because I'm sure if he doesn't listen.
David Keith likes this. Yeah, it's...
Mad officer to gentleman. Right?
But yeah, it's, you know, we try to put something in the lineup every year now that's older and black and white, just because it's a nice way, since we have the ability, all credit to the Grandview Theater, to show a lot of these older films that you can only show on a reel-to-reel projection system.
Is it a complete print? Not like the Black Cat a couple years ago?
The Black Cat was complete. It was just the final reel showed up in the wrong order.
Was that what it
was? So it ended up showing backwards. But yeah, as far as we know, this is it's a good print. It's on 35mm, and we're getting it from the UCLA archive. Which is, I guess, one of the few places where you can get a decent 35 print of it. But it was an odd thing because we assembled most of this lineup before White Zombie, and we made it down to that one slot and thought, well, wait, we probably should show something pre-1960 because we're really skewing after that at this point. So in part it was that, and in part it was just, you know, it's something that's never shown, and the birthday coincidence and all that other stuff comes in. And it's one of those, I think, that people who haven't seen it will enjoy it for being kind of an artifact, but also even in some of the goofiness of it, you know, Bela Lugosi is really great.
He's awesome.
I mean, aside from Dracula, it's probably his best role that he plays.
Yeah, and probably the most memorable outside of Dracula role.
Yeah, and there's a pretty memorable scene at the climax, which I won't give too much away, but even when I saw it a year ago for the first time, I thought, wow, you usually didn't see that in films of that era.
Nine-minute rape scene?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay, just checking.
Featuring Vukmir and his buddies.
What's up? What's next on the list?
Okay, Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Ooh.
Which, full credit, I did not think of automatically. Bruce did not think of automatically, but our executive assistant for all things evil, David Zucchini, who some of you out there might remember from his involvement with the Night of the Living Bread films, he really pushed that. And then when Ray Bradbury died, we thought, might as well. I mean, it's time enough. And we were able to locate a print. And yeah, I mean, it's some of the people on the forum on the message board have already said, like, oh, well, it's a Disney horror film and blah blah blah. But it's, you know, that
there's
film
wrong with that.
Yeah, and that film for its day, that was in an era in which Disney was trying to make slightly more adult films through their own imprint, like The Black Hole or Something Wicked, or, you know, a few films like that. And Something Wicked This Way Comes is a great film about a Halloween and the fall, but it's also about, you know, a great film from a kid's perspective. And Jason Robards is so fantastic in it. I mean, you haven't seen it. Kevin, somehow.
I've never seen it. I remember when it came out. I remember being like, I want to see it. And it was like PG. Because I think, when did it come out? What was the release?
Oh, God. It was maybe 83, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was at a time when I couldn't see an R-rated movie. And yeah. I don't think the PG-13 rating had been established yet.
You're right.
And so it was a big deal. I was like, oh, and I could never find anyone to go with me.
Yeah.
And that always bummed me out. And then it was one of those that I always missed on the shelf. Mm-hmm. It was always like my second choice.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I was saying another movie that was like that, which is not true at the marathon, was The Link. Did you ever see The Link?
I still haven't seen The Link, no.
That's the one, it has Elizabeth Shue and a orangutan painted black to be a chimpanzee. So it was basically an orangutan in blackface.
That's a hell of a concept. That's
horrifically offensive to chimpanzees, I think. But that's one that I missed for years, and then finally I said, screw it, it's on Netflix Instant, and I watched it.
This is a very roundabout way of Kevin saying, I'm a communist, I haven't seen Something Wicked This Way Comes.
I know, I am.
Yeah.
I'm evil.
Well, Jason Robards is so great in that, because the base story is about this father who feels guilty about not being able to save his son from drowning when he was a kid, and some other father saved him. And it's what drives his character. And there's this whole feeling of Robards feels like he's getting too old and his son wants to grow up before he can. And, and yeah, I mean, it's probably, I would venture to say it's probably the best Ray Bradbury adaptation, at least when you get into the more fantastical adaptations of his work.
Was this before Max Dugan returned?
Corey Haim, wherever you are up there,
Let's move on. What's next on the list we got here?
Werewolves on Wheels.
Nothing says awesome 70s awesomeness than Werewolves and Wheels.
What do you say?
Werewolf biker flick.
We have shown this trailer for years, and we never thought we could get it on film. And by the way, for those of you who haven't seen the trailer for Werewolves on Wheels, stop this podcast right now. Push pause on your computer. Go to YouTube and look up Werewolves on Wheels trailer.
You're not going to get too many options on that.
Fantastic. Yeah. It's pretty.
Don't click on some snotty 15-year-old going, my response to Werewolves on Wheels trailer.
It is. How does the trailer put it? It is the. I even have it here on the flyer. Good thing I brought this. Jeez. The most unusual and exciting horror motorcycle film yet made.
Well, that was in the 70s.
Possibly ever made.
Has there been one since that's been more exciting?
Pure horror motorcycle? I don't know. There have been more unusual motorcycles in horror films. There was Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
And Ghost Rider 2.
Can you call this a horror film?
Yeah.
Horrible.
So we showed this trailer for years and we thought, oh, that's one of those titles that we'll never be able to find. And we stumbled upon a source.
The Marathon Fairy showed up.
The Marathon Fairy showed up, dropped a print on our head or our lap or our other painful spot. And now that we're castrados, we can at least show Werewolves on Wheels. So everybody wins. Yeah. trust me. Figuratively and literally at this point.
But my castrati is not completely.
Bueno, bueno.
It's on its way out.
I haven't seen Werewolves on Wheels. From what I understand.
And you're the communist.
Yeah, I know. There are a lot more wheels than werewolves. But give me a break. I mean, how often do you get to see a film like Werewolves on Wheels in a theater on film with this crowd, which
now.
I'm sure will deeply enjoy it. So yeah, I almost don't want to. I feel like I've been guilty for a couple years now of taking one film and really overselling it. House, the Japanese film from a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I had some people come up to me after it showed at the marathon and say, oh, it was good, but I don't know. You really sold it like it was a life-changing experience. And part of it was we ended up showing it like an hour after we should have. It was, you know, we had some delays.
It was a little too late, yeah.
But I since then, I've tried to hold off on really giving the hard sell too much. So it's Werewolves. It's motorcycles, it's cultists, Satanists, it's 35mm.
Titties?
I don't know. It's a good question.
It should be.
I should know,
with a name like that, there better be.
I can't believe that I, the smut peddler, don't know about what nudity is in which film and how to plug that. I am. Liam, are you ready to take over for me? Because I'm losing it. This is not good.
All right.
Okay.
Next?
So, next up is another, you talk about Something Wicked This Way Comes, and how that there really is, I think, an audience in this marathon, especially in the marathon audience, that grew up on a film like Something Wicked This Way Comes and The Abominable Dr. Fives. Vincent Price's classic 1971 Mad Doctor film is one of those films as well.
And that's played at the marathon before.
It has played. I think
back in the early 90s.
Last time it played was at the final Night of the Living Drexel at the Drexel North, which I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign that that was at the final one. I hope that doesn't mean anything else for the event. But last year, we actually, there's a film that we've been really pursuing of Vincent Price. It's called The Tomb of Ligeia. Mm-hmm. Probably the most high-quality Roger Corman-directed Edgar Allan Poe cycle adaptation. And we really had wanted to show that, so we brought that up last year with the crowd and said, you know, we'd like to see that. Crowd had a good response. And then we said, how many of you would like to see The Abominable Dr. Fives again? And the crowd had a fantastic reaction. And I think that convinced us, okay, well, we should show this next year because the crowd will dig it. And coincidentally, talking about the somewhat morbid sub-theme of this marathon, the director, Robert Foist, died this year. Mm. So I think that cemented it at that point that, hey, he passed away. We should really show this in kind of a little mini tribute to him. And he's, hey, Ray Bradbury, that's an easy name to pay tribute to.
Yeah.
But Robert Foist is kind of a lesser known name, but he had a lot of really good projects. And Fibes is, you know, if you've seen it, it's a lot of fun. And
it's Nutty Cuckoo Bananas.
It
70s
is.
Stuff.
And it's Art Deco sets and the Clockwork Orchestra and Vincent Price talking through his neck. And I think this was actually the first Vincent Price film I saw as a kid. Which I can never believe at this point, because, you know, you think of, oh, the Poe stuff or anything else, or, but it holds a very special place in my heart, too, so hope awesome. The crowd likes it.
Played early.
Speaking of films, yes, hopefully. Speaking of films with a cult following, Phantom of the Paradise,
yes,
which I have been told already by a few dear friends that if I have any hand in canceling either Phantom of the Paradise or Something Wicked This Way Comes, they will break my legs.
Yeah.
So, here's knocking on wood and crossing fingers and all that stuff for that.
That's another Cuckoo Nutty Bananas.
Oh, wow,
70s.
Yeah. Brian De Palma, pre Dress to Kill, pre Blowout, pre Mission to Mars, you know, pre Rise and pre Decline, I guess. Pre Carry. Precarious. Yeah. If you
pre everything. I mean, it was pre Body Double.
Pre Body Double, yeah. This is De Palma's. What? I'm tempted to say I should know this, but I think it's his first genre film he directed.
Okay.
And, yeah, boy, Phantom of the Paradise. It's, if you like Rocky Horror, you might like this. It's almost like a very Rocky Horror vibe, but with a little more straight drama to it.
Oh, wow.
It's you've never seen it either, have you?
I've never seen it in completion. I've seen bits and pieces of it here and there.
Paul Williams is the Faust character, the music producer who runs everybody's lives. And William Finley, who, ironically enough, William Finley also passed away this year. So we have another little mini tribute. William Finley played the Phantom. William Finley is a fantastic songwriter, but obviously he's not that good looking. So he signs his soul away to Paul Williams after he's disfigured and becomes the Phantom. And the great Jessica Harper plays, what's her name? I can't believe. Paul Williams is Swan and Jessica Harper is Phoenix, the great Phoenix, the lovely Phoenix, the songstress who's kind of on the decline, but with the Phantom song, she becomes a star again.
For those who don't know, this is Phantom of the Opera.
Yes, it's wink, wink. Sorry about that.
Some people are not that bright.
Yeah, yeah. I'm completely missing my foregrounding in my cell here. Yeah, Phantom of the Opera meets glam rock. There we go.
There
I
you
could
are.
Just sit here all night and go, oh, it's so great. Yeah, it's another one that it's kind of a very non-traditional horror film, but it's something for at least 10 years I've at least said, yeah, we should show this. There's a crowd, and I think the crowd is planning on coming out in force.
And it fits in them. It fits as a horror film.
Yeah. Well, and you look at like Phantom of the Paradise and Dr. Fives, and they both have a little bit of a parallel. They're both kind of the mad, you know, genius who gets disfigured and has to carry on his mission for who he loves and intrigue and all that
and
stuff.
And all that nonsense.
All that
nonsense.
Yeah. Kiss, kiss, bang, bang, goofy stuff. So yeah, that should be fun. That I think is the soft portion of the lineup, the officially soft portion.
When does it get hardcore?
Hardcore stuff. On the other hand, oh boy, how do we descending?
Go to
Dead Alive. Yeah, Dead Alive. It's been 20 years since Dead Alive had its Midwest premiere at the 1992 Night of the Living Drexel.
I remember that.
I missed it. The marathon right before I started going, and I kick myself every day. I get up, and the first thing I think is kick yourself for not going to the marathon before then, because it's legendary.
It is legendary. It was a total shit your pants moment for that audience. Yeah.
For most people only having an inkling of what Peter Jackson or who he was, and you know, they may have seen Bad Taste or Meet the Feebles.
Oscar winner Peter Jackson.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not, I've never been a big fan of Dead Alive, but if I'm going to watch it, I want to watch it in a marathon crowd. Because they showed it at the one of the Studio 35 ones.
Yeah. In fact, the last one, wait a minute. I never realized this. The last marathon I organized for Studio 35, played Dead Alive.
You were setting yourself up for failure with
the
this
last
marathon.
Night of the Living Drexel had Abominable Dr. Fives. Wow. I think I might have to move now. Sorry, folks. Won't be seeing you there. Have fun with Liam, who will take over for me.
I had a friend with me at the Studio 35 marathon, and I'm like, no, you'll. And he was a cinematographer, and yeah. He really appreciated it. And I said, oh, it gets worse. He goes, this is crazy. I go, oh no, it gets worse. And it was one. He was one. If you ever remember, we're sitting up at the front and the left, and every now and then you just hear him go, damn.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and Dead Alive, it's one, when we were constructing the lineup, we had some of these titles right off the bat. Like, back at Sci-Fi Marathon, we had American Werewolf in London, Phantom of the Paradise, Possession, and Werewolves on Wheels booked. And then some of these other titles came into the picture. And at some point, we thought, wow, it's a really great lineup, not to toot our own horn or whatever you want to say. But,
yeah.
But we thought, well, we probably need a title that more people know, just in case. Because, I think everything in here is great, and I don't just say that because I'm trying to plug tickets. But to get something in there that has maybe a tad more mainstream appeal, and also, this was my dilemma, because I like to think when we're planning out the horror marathon, we're trying to figure out what will play best when.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to put 11, 12 films together. But a lot of times in practice, it can really lay an egg, because you end up having these great run of films, and then in the middle of the night, you die. Yeah. So we explicitly thought Dead Alive.
Dead Alive's a great middle of the
night. Great middle of the night movie. Hasn't played in a while. It's fast-paced. It's gory. It's got that slightly wider appeal. And with the 20th anniversary of its Midwest premiere, what better time? Ironically enough, too, we have a guy who I think his last marathon was at the 1992 Night at the Living Drexel, wow, who is coming back from Seattle to his first marathon in 20 years. So it'll be like he never left.
Aw, so adorable.
Dead Alive then, Dead Alive now. Yeah, it's downright touching.
What's up next?
Next, American Werewolf in London.
Oh.
Which, amazingly enough, has never played at a Columbus Marathon.
It's been scheduled, if I'm not mistaken. Am I right? Or originally said it was.
I know we've booked it at least twice for the Shock Around the Clock before we announced the lineup. And then we canceled because we had other things and knew we could get this.
Like Slither,
yeah. Well, and they're both in the same studio, too. I tell you, Universal Pictures, their repertory department is fantastic. And Slither, we booked from them. And American Werewolf in London, we booked from them. And it's nice that we know, hey, they're maintaining their library. We can go back next year and get it. But we finally decided, look, American Werewolf, we've been teasing it. We should show it. And it's another one of those titles that more people might know. Although you and I might be dating ourselves at this point by saying, everybody knows that.
If you won't, then who will? Right?
Yeah. Well, and it's a great anchor film, too, because it's probably one of the better horror comedy dramas of that era and probably of any era.
Yeah.
And the effects are great. And what else can you say?
No, I guess not much. Let's move on. What's next?
Let's see. We're down to the final four. Let's start with Videodrome.
Yes.
Yeah, one of my faves. As you can probably tell, surprise, surprise. Videodrome, another one we've been wanting to show for a while. Because it has also never shown at a Columbus Marathon. It made it to the flyer of the 1999 Sci-Fi Marathon, and they had to cancel it shortly before the marathon. So, yeah, David Cronenberg. It's one of those where if you really love David Cronenberg, chances are you think Videodrome is awesome.
Yeah.
If you don't like him, chances are you might think Videodrome is surreal and weird and meandering. But David Cronenberg's stuff has always gone over well at the marathons.
Yeah.
And how can you beat James Woods as a sleazy cable TV operator and Debbie Harry being sexy in her prime? And flesh-colored orifices in your stomach with guns?
If you need bullet-ridden chest vaginas,
yeah,
Videodrome is the movie to check out.
If you're into that type of stuff, please show up. And bring your friends who might be into that.
Bring your children.
And your children who might be into that.
And your nun. She's like, oh, yeah, I love chest vaginas.
Yeah.
We must go see that.
Well, Videodrome is, I'm going to start digging a hole I can't even get out of.
It makes no goddamn sense.
Yeah, it's probably of all of Cronenberg's films, it's the one film where, admittedly, he went into it without a finished script. Hmm. But for the subject matter, it makes perfect sense because it's this slow descent into pure hallucination and you don't quite know what's real and what's not real. Yeah. And if you just ride along with it,
it's been
awesome.
A while since I've seen it, so yeah. I am looking forward to it.
Well, and it is, I mean, he'll always deny this and say he had no intent. But it is pretty prophetic. I mean, the things it said about TV and about how media would just saturate our lives and how we'd turn into being so connected to the television or whatever, a screen with an image from it, and how that would...
With a podcast.
Yeah, and ironically enough. But enough of that sociopolitical stuff, because I'm sure most of you will just love it for all the blood and guts and
just
nakedness and, yeah, naughtiness. All right, well, down to three. Yes. So, let's see. Let me go with the one that is probably the most well-known of these three, and that's the Devils.
Yes.
So the great, wild, gonzo, nutsoid, bizarre, eccentric, fill in your adjective, Ken Russell, dies last December. And we've been wanting to show the Devils for a long, long time. Because the last time it showed, as with Dead Alive, was 20 years ago.
I was about to say, I think it was the same one.
Yeah, same marathon. So the guy from Seattle, it'll really be like he never left. Because
he'll be like, I just saw these.
I love the marathons, but you know, it's the same damn thing again. Going to shake it up a bit.
This one has boobs, too. It's lots of nun titties.
Do you like naked nuns? If you like naked nuns, come see this.
It's basically the William Tell Overture at one point. Nun titty, nun titty, nun.
Yes. See, that's why this guy gets paid to do these things. And I just come in and ramble on about, you know, oh, sociopolitical importance and Serbian films commentary on the modern Czech state. And Kevin tells the jokes. See, that's why you want to listen to him and not me.
You make a very good guest.
Thank you. Well, we've wanted to get the Devils again for a long time, and it's incredibly hard to get for various reasons, but Warner Brothers were kind enough, and many, many, many thanks to them, kind enough to provide us with a digital copy of it to show. And we try, you know, we pride ourselves on trying to show as much film as we can. Everything else in the lineup, as far as we know, as of right now, is on film, on 35mm.
And don't worry, by the end of this, the marathon, if you stay the whole time, you'll also be covered in film.
You hopefully will, yeah.
Be some sort of film on you, yes.
Yeah, free gifts. But we figured with Ken Russell dying and with the screening of Green Slime at the Sci-Fi Marathon, which was also a digital copy from, you know,
a good digital copy.
It was very good, and I think that convinced us finally, look, we should, if we can get the Devils in any presentable way from Warner Brothers, we should. And again, many, many thanks to them, because they've provided us with the opportunity to show this. And I think there's a decent chunk of the crowd that has never seen this.
Yeah.
And boy, the Devils, I went back and watched it again last December when Russell died, and it is so intense. Even for today's standards, this was 1971, and it was a huge controversy back then. But it's still a really powerful film. I mean, it's borderline horror in some ways. It's based on the true case of the church in France trying to take over the government, and this town called Loudun, which was run by a Protestant priest, and the people were Catholic, and they all, or I'm sorry, the priest was Catholic, and the town was half Protestant, but they all got along. But the government, they wanted to take the whole thing over, and when they couldn't get their way, they took advantage of a certain humpback nun played by Vanessa Redgrave in the film, who was madly in love with the priest. And
don't say too much, because
no, that's the setup right there. That's okay. Like first 15 minutes of the film, and then things go bad shit.
Yeah,
and it's great, and it's a cool thing because it's a really crazy film, and it's got all sorts of exploitation elements and naked nuns and naughty stuff and terrible things. But it's a really, really great film and a well-made film, too. And it probably is as relevant today as it was in 1971. So awesome. I am stoked beyond belief to see this with a crowd.
I'll be curious to see it again. I wasn't terribly impressed when I saw it 20 years ago, but then again, I was in my early 20s.
You were young and dumb.
I was stupid.
You didn't know what good was.
I was just like, boobies! Get to the boobies!
Okay, well, and to be fair, too, I know for a fact that showed at like 4 or 5 in the morning back then.
It was a late.
We
it
are
was
gonna,
not a great late.
I'm going to shoot myself in the foot right now, but we are going to do everything in our powers. Those powers are limited, trust me. Everything in our powers to show this, hopefully maybe 10 p.m. or midnight.
Right after
so.
Slither.
Right after Slither and the director's commentary of Slither and our live commentary of Slither and Slither backwards. First 12 hours of the marathon are just going to be all Slither all the time. Nathan Fillion doing a script.
So you're going to schedule it for like 11 o'clock, which means it'll play about 1:30, something like that.
Don't even say it. I'm telling you, there's going to be a day when the marathon remains fairly on schedule.
It's like me going to my mom's house for Thanksgiving, and I'd be like, when's dinner? 2 o'clock. I'm like, so we're eating at 3, 3:30?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. We should schedule the Devils at 3 o'clock p.m. and then eventually it'll show at 11 o'clock.
Exactly.
As it goes, yeah. Yeah, but we're gonna do everything we can to have it at an hour, because I think too, now, especially with him dying, this would be a great time for a crowd to really appreciate something like that when they're awake.
There's your theme to the movie, is dead people who made movies.
It is. Well, The Devils, Phantom of the Paradise, Abominable Dr. Fives, Something Wicked This Way Comes. Who knows? Maybe Sam Neill will die before.
Maybe somebody could go kill Peter Jackson.
Somebody could kill Peter Jackson. Not that we're endorsing that, but if, yeah.
Because they wouldn't get all three Hobbit movies out.
Now Peter Jackson's going to come after me, too. Jeez.
Trust me, he's too busy.
His power.
With his 48 frames per second.
His 48 frame per second tentacles are out there, trust me. They move faster. They know where you are.
All right, what's the next one?
All right, we're down to two, and speaking of Sam Neill, Possession.
Yes.
I will
Not the one that's out in theaters
and
right now.
Not Aaron Eckhart and Gwyneth Paltrow, I think it was,
Fuck
where they
Gwyneth
were.
Paltrow.
Yeah, yeah. Gwyneth, I'm a big supporter, please. Tell Chris Martin I said hi.
I'll kick you in the taint.
Could use some of their money right now.
Except for the Royal Tenenbaums.
Ooh, yeah. Possession. I have not seen Possession. I will be completely upfront about this. Possession is by the... If you talk about madman directors, mm-hmm. you've got Cronenberg, who's like a pretty civilized madman. You've got Ken Russell, who is the master of excess. But then you have Andrzej Żuławski. I believe that is the correct pronunciation. The ultimate Polish madman filmmaker, who has a CV in terms of his films that is just so all over the place and fantastic for that. He's made straight dramas. He's made a crime film. He's made an aborted sci-fi film where he ran into problems with the Polish government and couldn't finish
it.
Is
this in Polish or is it English?
No, it's in English, yeah. Okay. Possession is from 1981, and it's Sam Neill and Isabella Gianni. And all I can tell you is the basics, which are... Isabella Gianni comes home, or Sam Neill comes home from a government mission that he's on, because he works for, I'm going to mess this up now, we'll just say he's a candy man, how about that? Mm-hmm. He comes home, and his wife, played by Isabella Gianni, wants a divorce.
Of course.
And things get really, really, really weird from there. This is a film that I read so much about when it was re-released this year, because the good folks at Bleeding Light Film Group created a new, uncut 35mm print. And it's played at a lot of very prestigious venues around the country. And I read the notices and I read the descriptions and I just thought, well, we have to get this because this is so up our alley, up our crowd's alley. I almost don't want to say too much because I feel like I might oversell it to me.
Don't oversell it.
But from everything I've read, this is something where you will, of any of the films in the lineup, I'm guessing you probably won't want to miss this one, even just to see how the crowd gets into it or reacts to it. And then also to see just how nuts the film is.
It's actually one, it's of all the ones on there, even though there's some I haven't seen, it's probably the one I have the least awareness of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Werewolf on Wheels, I've got that from seeing the trailer and knowing kind of how to pigeonhole it in my head.
Yeah, and yeah.
Possession
not is
so much.
Much harder. And it's something where, like, the tagline I keep using is that Żuławski, in a lot of his films, he deals with these really operatic emotions. Mm. Probably his most famous film is called The Most Important Thing is to Love.
To love!
And it's about this B-movie actress who used to be kind of legitimate, and she's frustrated with her career, and she meets this guy who's a press photographer, like the paparazzi, who sneaks on set to photograph her, and they fall in love.
Adorable.
And it seems like, oh, well, stock idea. But it's really great because it's just all about how, like, great and how miserable love can be. And to give you an idea, Klaus Kinski plays the comic relief. So, you know, but all his films kind of deal with these things, and Possession has often been called kind of the ultimate expression of what he was doing. And Dario Argento, if you like Dario Argento, like yours truly does, he once said it was his favorite film of the 80s.
Yeah,
and his daughter thinks still it's a fantastic, mind-blowing experience.
I'm kind of stunned looking at this lineup because I totally was expecting some Italian horror to be thrown in there as well.
Oh, man, I'm telling you. If
there's nothing in subtitles yet, unless there's a premiere. Well, let's finish up talking about the last one.
Because how could we finish without talking about Kill List?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, this would probably be a good time to address premieres in general and with Kill List because, as some of you know, we've talked about this for a while, but it is getting harder now for an event like the Marathon to get premieres. Last year, we happened upon Serbian film and Midnight Sun, great independently budgeted vampire film. But we only learned that we could show those maybe 2.5 weeks beforehand. And a lot of times now, depending on what film it is, you'll get either another theater in town might snap it up months in advance, or you'll get a distributor who, and I don't necessarily blame them, but they'll look at our event as compared to a lot of these genre festivals that have been springing up willy-nilly all over the place.
Like Horror Hound, which is every 3 months.
And they might look at us and say, well, you're not really a festival, even though we've been doing this for almost 2 decades, and we get people legitimately from all over the country, and we get a really rabid crowd. And if you want to test market, this is your audience right here. But sometimes pitching that to them is tougher, because they'll look at us and say, oh, you're a one-day event at a theater. You're not a huge festival. Yeah. So we, like, for this lineup, right now we have 11 films pre-ordered. We want to optimally add one more film, maybe even two, that are legitimate premieres, that are things like, you haven't seen this on video a year ago, or you're really going to see this before most other audiences locally will see it.
Well, so many places are going VOD already first.
And that's another complicating factor too, is you go to VOD and it starts bringing up the question, like, well, what's a premiere? Well, is this really a premiere because I've seen it on VOD, or is this really because... So my philosophy at this point is that...
And there's a theater in town that will announce premieres of movies I have on the shelf on DVD.
You are right, there is. I couldn't imagine who that would be.
I won't give any more details.
Now they're coming after me too. Jeez, thanks, Kevin. I'm going to have just pitchforks and torches outside once
I
get out of this place.
You should hire those the angry villagers who won the costume contest 20 years ago.
The guy who's coming from Seattle?
Yeah.
That's him.
That's him?
One of the angry villagers guys, yeah.
Didn't he win 2 years in a row? Was he the one who did Clockwork Orange in the next year?
No, that was another guy. But he's come back too.
Oh, okay.
That's our audience right now. We get the people who have been gone and then
the
they come back.
The people who won the costume contest in the 90s.
The people from back in the day. That's which is cool, but hey.
I remember back in the day when they showed 13 movies.
Ironically enough, that's how they sound too. Yeah, yeah. Boy.
And you can bring a cooler in there with you, damn it.
Yeah, we've gotten so tight and small.
I had heartburn at 5 a.m. and I loved it.
It was great.
The bathroom smelled worse than the outside.
Yeah, we've at least advanced to that. Our bathrooms smell good. Yeah. What you want, but the bathroom is nice.
My sister went to a marathon once, a couple times. And she said, and it was actually at the Rife, I think it was actually at the Rife Center.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of bodies in there, let's just say. And
that's,
it's been a while.
Charitable, yeah.
She says, you know what? People should bathe before they come to the marathon.
It's a really great idea.
Good idea to do that, because it shouldn't smell worse when you come out of the bathroom.
Now, I'll vouch for this, and this is no real knock on sci-fi.
Yeah.
But I sit in the back of every horror marathon, back row with Bruce, just in case we need to run out for a second.
Yeah.
And although my sense of smell is not superhuman, the horror marathon's been okay. The air circulation's been pretty good. Sci-fi, sometimes here and there, you'll get that. Not that that's a horrible thing.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm here defending the scent of the horror marathon. This is what we've gone to. It's like bathrooms and good smelling people.
Well, no, but
it
makes sense, because it's not even just, you know, being there and sort of baking in your own juices for the 24 hours. But it's the fact that you're eating hot dogs and pizza and...
Oh yeah,
fast food in essence. You know, even if you get a nice salad or something like that, you know, you're still limited by what's available at the theater. Concession food does not, when it rears its head 12 hours later.
That is true. You and I had a pretty stimulating conversation about fiber intake at the marathon back at Sci-Fi. I remember.
I think we did.
That
is
very true. I will say, for the Grand View, they have.
Hey, remember that?
They have. I eat fiber at the marathon, so I'm keeping it healthy.
Brings his fiber bars.
I promise I will stay as clean and healthy as I can for this event, folks. Yeah. The Grand View, they do a really good job of partnering up. I think it's with Cowtown Pizza down the street.
Yeah.
To have a pretty diverse menu. So if you want something that has some glean or some tease of nutrition, they've been good. I mean, it's better than just having to eat milk duds for 24 hours or hot dogs or pretzels.
Yeah.
But anyway, so with the premiere situation, my philosophy right now is that we would love to get one or two more films that are semi-legit to legit premieres, as in things that this audience will see for the first time. That being said, if it's between getting two premieres or showing Kill List, which is a film we are showing this year, and maybe another recent film that some people might have seen but most people haven't, I'd almost rather do that, because, to take Kill List, for example, great film, played, I think, at the Gateway back in March for a couple shows. A few years ago, we played House, the Japanese film that I mentioned before. And with House, our worry was, well, it played at the Wexner Center for 4 shows over 2 nights. but 95% of our crowd by the time we made it to the marathon hadn't seen it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think a lot of the times our crowd will wait to see something like this at the event, or I hope they are. And Kill List strikes me as something that, even though it has played in town in this past calendar year, I'm guessing quite a bit of our audience hasn't seen it. And if they haven't, and if you don't know much about it, it's just an overwhelming, shattering experience to see. And I can guarantee you this, and again, hopefully I'm not shooting myself in the foot here, but we've arranged to show a 35mm print of it. Ooh. And it's something that I think would really benefit from 35mm.
Okay.
Everything I've ever read about it, I mean, I saw it on video, but everything I've read about it is that the sound mix was tailored specifically for theater, so you'd get a very immersive and at the same time really slowly disturbing effect just from what it sounds like alone. It's two guys who were contract killers. They were in Iraq for a while, you know, the modern Iraq war. Come back to England. Times are tight.
Hey,
times
Governor.
Are tough. Yeah, pretty much.
Got anyone you need to kill?
Well, and it's great. Ben Wheatley, the guy who directed it, his first film was called Down Terrace. Mm. And it was all about this.
Not Down Periscope.
Not Down Periscope. No. Different. No. He's denied any involvement with that. Down Terrace is basically, it's a family of low-level gangsters. And most of the film takes place in their house.
Yeah.
And it's kind of off-putting in some ways because you think, wow, this is just them talking. And it's good. But Kill List starts out like that, where it's kind of this domestic drama between these two guys, and one of them's married, and one of them has a girlfriend. And they're low on cash. And it's like, what do we do? And so, one day, they get an offer to get back in the game.
Hey, Governor!
Wow, this sounds sneakily familiar. Getting back in the game for one more time. Bad things happen, except this doesn't involve pornography. Serbian film, possibly. I don't know. The odd thing was, last year, we had an offer of the three premieres we could have secured. Serbian film, Midnight Sun, or Kill List. I really wanted to show Kill List then, because I thought, I've heard tremendous things about it, but ultimately, our decision was, let's show Midnight Sun, because that's fairly straight vampire horror. And if we're going to go with one of the others, Kill List or Serbian film, let's go with Serbian film. Let's alienate the audience because it has all this shock factor to it. It's a good thing we didn't show Serbian film and Kill List. This is not really giving anything away about Kill List, but just that base concept of someone drawn back into their nefarious profession to make ends meet. I think if we had showed this after Serbian film, people would have come up and just said, wow, that was shorter. Say that. But that being said, I mean, Kill List is... Serbian film was so in your face in how graphic it was. Mm-hmm. And that completely served what it is. Kill List has a little bit more of a slow burn aspect to it. But let me tell you, even watching it on video when I did, once it ramps up, it's really, really intense.
Cool.
And I'm pretty excited about this. And I hope that there are enough people in the audience who haven't seen it that they'll enjoy it too. And like I said too, we say this a lot, but if you're listening out there and you haven't seen Kill List and you want to come to the event, don't find out anything else about it.
Yeah.
Watch the trailer if you want, but the less you know, the better. So we have that, and then hopefully we're going to pursue another premiere, possibly two premieres, see what happens between now and October 20th. And if you want to know more about that, check out horrormarathon.com or the Facebook page or the Twitter feed.
Go to the forum. Yeah,
the forum. We'll let you, as soon as we know, we pretty much put it up on all those avenues, and we go from there.
Awesome.
So is that a good enough pitch of this stellar, legendary? I've had several people, and again, I'm not sure I would say this even, but I've had several people who've gone to this for a long time already say, wow, this might be the best lineup ever.
This is a good lineup. And the reason is because the stuff that you may have seen before has good replay value, and I think that's why.
That's a very good point. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, American Werewolf in London, you couldn't have seen two or three times. Maybe if you saw it last week, it might be a little tiresome to see again. But, you know, Dead Alive, a lot of people have seen it at least twice because they, you know, marathon faithful. So,
well, you know what's interesting, too, with that? I think we've talked about this before, but we have been doing these things for a long time. We think of Dead Alive. We think of Reanimator. We think of Evil Dead 2. Films like that. Films that we kind of grew up on. Or they were part of our formative horror experience. You know, that whole 10-year stretch when Brian Usna and Stuart Gordon were huge, and they were like the next, and Clive Barker was the next star of horror. There's an entire generation who has never seen Evil Dead 2 on a big screen, or Dead Alive on a big screen, or has seen it at all.
Yeah,
and that, I think, that's what we've been trying to do, is bring back a couple of these titles that we may think are just old hat, but which are great in a lot of ways. And, you know, and Dead Alive is great in a lot of ways. It's really a fun film. It's like a classic comedy with a bunch of exploding heads and and mutant babies and farting. Pus and farting, yes, and all that stuff.
I got Liam here, you know, who's been to the marathon. This will be his fourth marathon. I'm going to hand the microphone over to him, and he can ask you a couple questions.
Liam, the future of the marathon.
Do you have
like
some questions?
Say.
Here. You don't have any questions?
I don't think so.
I'll take anything, so? Liam. No holds barred.
Anything. Ask him.
Why did you show Serbian film last year?
Ask him what his social security number and his mother's maiden name.
Dad. Kind of for you. It's kind of for you.
It's for me? You have a question for me? What?
In The Devils, is there as much naked nuns as in rock climbing in Lost Continent?
I wouldn't say it's as concentrated, but probably. There's a lot of naked. Like I said.
A whole lot of naked nuns.
Nun titty nun.
They spend a decent, I'd say a third to half of the movie nude.
And these aren't like old, craggly, average age 70-year-old
no.
nuns. There's some nuns with some...
If you enjoy nudity, this is pretty high quality nudity.
There's some great habits.
Yes.
The Nun and the Three Stooges by the pool.
What? Oh, from that... Oh,
Kate Upton quality
yeah.
nudity? Well, if...
This is the 70s.
Yeah.
It wasn't as sculpted or tanned back then. And
no.
they were covered in their robes, at least
but,
through most of the movie.
You know, if you do a little A-B comparison, then you even out decades worth of...
I literally
Stopping
have
tanning.
This,
yeah.
this like one shot of this woman, and she had huge knockers. That's like the most thing. And they have big white walls in the.
Place. Oh yeah, yeah. The sets are pretty fantastic.
Impressive.
It's all white walls and white brick and yeah.
And white fleshy.
White
boobies.
Fleshy nuns, except for Vanessa Redgrave, who plays the humpback. Sorry, mild spoiler. She does not get naked. With the humpback, that is.
Three boobs, I guess, at that point.
It sounds kind of, yeah, I don't know where to go with that.
Do you have any other questions, Liam?
No.
You sure?
No,
anything to add?
This could be your only chance, Liam.
Is there a cash prize for the costume?
Oh, yeah, God, jeez, wow.
Liam won the costume contest.
Yeah, yeah, if you don't know, because we've been bearing the lead here. Liam was the winner of the costume contest at the Sci-Fi Marathon this
party
year.
Rock
dressed
robot.
As, what were you, officially, what were you?
A party rock robot.
A party rock robot.
From the... LMFAO.
Yes,
song.
Yeah. Liam basically fulfilled one of the two rules of a costume contest, and that is if you are a kid or a woman who bears flesh in any way, you will probably win. Unless the audience is feeling squirrely and they, you know, vote for Roman. Which
you know what's funny is I tweeted out when Liam won that. I said on Facebook, I'm like, hey, you know, Liam won. And then there's a friend of mine who I went to high school with, and she's like, oh, yeah, I remember winning that contest. And she was like her name's Meg, and she was like a French maid, had long, big,
oh
leggy.
My God, I've heard about the French maid.
Yeah.
Wow, you should totally tell Bruce that you went to high school with the French maid, because he thought she was pretty great.
She was fun. Yeah, it was,
wow.
Yeah, because she like commented on it. She's like, remember when I won that? I'm like, yes, you stole because you were like, you had your legs showing and everything.
Yeah, the marathon audience is still pretty base in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But Liam fulfilled that. He won. So
there was no leggy brunette that you were going up against.
No. No, you were going up against some younger kids and who else?
It was the little guy with the spider.
Oh, yeah. It was Roman. Roman dressed as the spider. Oh, the fly. He was the fly.
That's right. The fly.
Yeah,
help me.
Sorry, we keep referring to Roman. It's a guy who I forget his name, but we refer to him as Roman because he won the costume contest several times.
He always wears a Mark for the Martian shirt for the sci-fi.
Dressed
I think he
Roman.
Uses, but he always wears, he a lot of times wears the monster shirt from the Looney Tunes.
I think you're right. Yeah.
He's been in all of them. So.
He has. Mm. He has.
Marathon faithful.
Oh, if there is one, that's him.
Yeah.
But yeah, Liam will try again. You don't want to give away any details
away.
Of your costume, do you?
Still thinking of it. He hasn't come up with one.
Okay.
I've got one, and
yeah.
I'm going to try and... Well, keep it
Liam,
to yourself.
Liam, just think. I know Sci-Fi, you won some prizes, but just think. $100 first prize, plus prizes, but you get $100 in... We'll give it to you in cash, but we are... Oh, God, how could I... This is the attraction of the whole marathon. We are finally, I swear to God, we are finally, or to the devil, one of the two. I'll swear to whichever unholy deity will have me. We are finally bringing back, once and for all, the infamous giant check to give to the winner of the costume contest.
Ooh,
so not only could you win a giant novelty check, but you could win a bunch of prizes and $100. Think of all the things you could do with $100. Think of how much your dad could steal from you if you had $100 in the middle of the night.
You could buy a t-shirt then.
You could buy a t-shirt. A rare limited edition signed t-shirt from me and my partner in crime. But yeah, yeah. If you have never come to the marathons before, it's films, but it's also trailers in the middle. It's
lots
shorts,
of cool stuff, yeah.
Music during the intermissions, video footage, the fourth annual costume contest. You win $100 first prize and
Scream
other gifts.
Contest.
Scream contest, another traditional favorite. We're hoping...
You want to try the scream here, Liam, real quick? Yeah. Give us an example of your scream.
Cover your ears.
That wasn't bad.
That was... Wow. You know, I told Liam before that he might have too much testosterone to win, but I don't know. You still might be at the age where you have...
Do you want to scream, Ben? Do you want to do a scream? My other son came running in the room here to scream.
No.
We're
no?
practicing. No, no scream. This is your last chance. All right, come here, quick. Quick,
way too happy for this.
Give me a scream. Scream as loud as you can. Damn.
Sorry about your ears, folks.
You want to hear my scream?
Knock yourself out. I entered the scream contest once a long time ago at a marathon I didn't organize, and I did kind of a long yelp. I did this, and just held on for a long time.
Weird
and
sexual thing?
I guess so, yeah. It was a moan or
was my friend Megan next to you or something like that?
I don't think so.
The leggy brunette?
I might have had a different reaction.
What do you want? Question for Joe? Oh, wait.
Liam does have a question.
Is there a prize for the Scream contest?
Not a cash prize.
Yeah, we traditionally have it. Come on, it's $100. We can't throw
that
around.
Do you want to scream, Nick? My third son now needs to scream. He's four. Scream! There we go.
This is quite possibly now the most offensive and cutest interview you've ever done. So usually for the Scream contest, we don't have a cash prize, but we often get enough good swag.
No, you don't
that,
need to do it again.
You know, it's more than worth it. I mean, between action figures and board games and lanyards like we had last year, I think we still have some lanyards
left over.
Do you have
Serbian film swag? Can you get like a shirt and he can wear it?
Oh, they totally missed out on that Serbian film swag. Yeah, Serbian film t-shirts, Serbian film inflatable. Yeah, I don't want to say anymore. Yeah, I'm going to get in big trouble now. Just inflatable, yeah.
We'll go with the other room.
Yes. Yeah, Liam knows.
All right. Oh, we're completely going off the rails here. Is there anything else you want to add on this?
We've been off the rails for a long time. All right. Off into the ocean at this point.
Go to horrormarathon.com if you want to find out more. Go to the forums. Go to the Facebook page.
And
all that information is on horrormarathon.com.
And
tickets.
Just for the tag. Yeah, oh, you were going to do it? You want it?
I was going to say, yeah. Tickets $35 in advance, $40 at the door. You get them at the Grandview Theater at 1247 Grandview Avenue or Laughing Ogre Comics at 4258 North High Street, or you can purchase them via PayPal. There's a small fee according to PayPal.
There's a $2 PayPal fee for processing and then for mailing. But if you go to horrormarathon.com, we have a PayPal button. Should be pretty easy. Yeah. And by the way, I usually don't say this, but I should. The Laughing Ogre has sold tickets for us for probably 20 years now.
They're great.
They are an awesome, awesome store. Even if you're not into comic books, go there, buy something, give them money, throw some. Yeah, they're not only great supporters of the marathon, but they're a really great local institution that's survived for this long. And
it's survived longer than the Drexel North.
Yeah, yeah. They've outlived the Drexel North. So all credit to them, too. Thank you to them for being on our side and helping us out throughout the years.
Cool. Joe, thank you so much for being here.
Kevin, it's always a pleasure. And to hear your three screaming children.
That's right.
And my day's made.
We will talk to you again maybe in the spring, but definitely next year.
I'd love to.
Then you can mash. Then you can monster mash. The monster mash. And do my graveyard smash. Then you can mash. You'll catch on in a flash. Then you can mash. Then you can monster mash. Monster Mash! Monster Mash! Monster Mash! Monster Mash!